Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, March 17, 2024. My name is Melanie C., a recovered compulsive overeater from Canby, Oregon. The share ID numbers for Friday, March 15, 2024 are the following. The 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study share ID number is 21228, 21228. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study, the share ID number is 21229, 21229. This morning, A Vision for You presents, see to it that your relationship with Him is right. Let's say that again. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. What is a right relationship with God as we understand God? What does this have to do with recovering from compulsive overeating? And we are about to find out today. Cultivating a life recovered is founded in one's relationship with a higher power, often referred to as Him in the spiritual context, just for ease, I guess, and it is the alignment and crucial in the 12 steps of recovery. It is wonderfully and meticulously outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And here are some key aspects to consider. It's essential to nourish a sincere and authentic connection with our individual higher power. This involves being honest about struggles, fears, aspirations, and seeking guidance and support with an open heart and open mind. Recognizing our limitations and surrendering to a power greater than ourselves, our complexities of ego, distrust, and fears is fundamental in this spiritual process. It involves finally acknowledging that we cannot overcome our challenges alone, and relinquishing control to a higher power is that freedom and reassurance. Steps 10, 11, and 12, when we get to that point, are the building blocks towards trust and faith in our higher power. This requires, again, honesty, patience, and perseverance. It involves believing in a guiding force that has our best interests at heart, even when the path ahead seems uncertain and quite challenging and very narrow. Regular reflection and prayer, as we define it, is intended to deepen our connection with power and foster a sense of intimacy and communion. Taking time to listen for guidance and express gratitude can strengthen our relationship and provide comfort and reassurance. Striving to live in alignment with our spiritual values and principles is essential for maintaining a healthy relationship with power. This involves practicing kindness, compassion, honesty, and integrity in our interactions with others and with ourselves. Ultimately, enlarging a right relationship with our higher power is a deeply personal and individual journey. It requires an ongoing commitment to self-reflection, growth, and spiritual practice, but the rewards of a deep and meaningful connection can be profoundly transformative. Today, we are privileged to hear a personal account of a promised transformation as the result of working the entire 12-step program of recovery daily. Imagine, if you will, a journey filled with triumphs, challenges, and profound insights of the joys of recovery and discovery. That's exactly what our guest speaker has to offer to us today. Get ready to be captivated by the story of a recovered life. Our speaker hails from the lovely state of South Carolina, has been a loyal, enthusiastic member of this Big Book study, lovingly named A Vision for You, for a long, long time. And I am honored to introduce you to her this morning. Welcome, welcome, Lisa B. from South Carolina.
Oh, good morning, Melanie. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear. Yep, you bet.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for your service. Good morning, everyone. My name is Lisa B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm here in the Greenville area of South Carolina. And I do spell my name L-E-S-A, just because people say you should tell people that's how you spell your name. I am really thrilled to be here. I've been a part of Vision since the end of 2015. That's when I came on to my very first meeting, and some circumstances have changed for me, so I haven't been able to be on live on the meeting for quite a while now. I listen every day to at least one meeting from the recorded meetings from the website, mostly two meetings a day I listen to. And I'm so inspired by where we are in the big book right now. And I just really felt so much juice flowing through me that I'm just thrilled to be able to share my experience in getting recovered as a compulsive overeater. So I celebrated in January, by God's grace, good sponsorship, the 12 steps and the big book and the spiritual awakening, 8 years of abstinence. But, you know, the spiritual awakening, the personality change, which is what's most important really for me. And that's what I wanted to share about. So actually this weekend, 37 years ago, my father dropped me off at a treatment facility because I could not stop binge eating. And I was 24 years old, and I was so thrilled and counting my blessings to be in that facility. I know that sounds weird, but I felt safe. And I thought, you know, I'm finally going to get the help that I want and need. And I had been around 12-step meetings because my brother had been in NA and AA, and I was seeing the miracle transformation begin to happen for him. And that's when I thought, you know, maybe there's a 12-step program for me. So, you know, my compulsive overeating really took off when I got into my late teens and 20s. I became aware of my relationship with food when I was in my early teens. But it was recreational. It was fun. It took the edge off. And, you know, don't bug me about my food. It's great. You know, I love my food. And I just compulsively exercised. And I became a restrictor when I was in college. And I felt very powerful being gaunt and thin, looking like a heroin addict. And a 400-pound person inside of me, or I have an 80-pound person inside of me. But when I got into my mid-20s and got my first apartment, things really changed for me, and it wasn't fun anymore, and I could not stop binge eating. I had youth on my side and the ability to compulsively exercise that I somehow managed to not really show it on my body, but I was dying in my spirit and in my soul, my personality, everything, you know. And I cried out for help, and I went to this facility, and I was introduced to the big book. I had been introduced to the big book a little bit in the beverage program, but, you know, it's really weird because when I was in that facility, I learned about a food plan, and I was blessed with a good food plan that did eliminate pretty much most of my alcoholic ingredients and foods. But I was missing something, and this is what I was missing, the sense of urgency that if I do not get into these steps and have that spiritual awakening and develop that relationship with power, because lack of power is my whole problem, it's just going to be a matter of time. And guess what? That's what happened to me. I had about 5 years of a white-knuckle abstinence, really kind of worshiping a food plan, but feeling very arrogant and cocky. And like, I've got this, and maybe I made too much of it after all. And maybe it was just childhood trauma. And then I met my husband, and wow, you know what? Maybe this is all I needed, a man that's going to pay attention to me and listen to me and love me and think I'm great, you know? And eventually I got back into the food and stayed untreated as a compulsive overeater for over 20 years. You know, until I was standing in an AA meeting hall here in Greenville, and someone told me about a vision for you. And I got on that meeting really fast because I could feel a binge. It was like a cold chill, you know, breathing down my neck. At that time, I was underweight, but that's just a matter of time. Because for me, when I'm underweight, there's always a huge, massive binge coming because, hey, I've got all this wiggle room now, you know, to eat as much as I want. So I got on that meeting, and I just was so thrilled with what I heard. I heard so much strong recovery. I heard it was like amazing meetings, you know, that I've heard in the beverage program, almost like being away at a big book study weekend. and I heard the solution, but I was hearing it with compulsive overeaters. When I came to OA in 2015, that was my second OA meeting. My very first OA meeting was in 1986. I wandered in there with my sister went to support me. And I just didn't hear anything. I probably had a big veil over my eyes, you know, and over my ears. I am sure those wonderful people, those four or five women that are the age that I am now, you know, talked about recovery, but I just didn't hear it. And I've often thought that if I came to Vision for You 3 or 4 years sooner than I did, I wouldn't have been ready. I would have said, this is too extreme. It's unrealistic to live like this. So I was ready when I came in and when I introduced myself and started working as a newcomer. I introduced myself and started working with my recovered sponsor that I met through this phone line in January of 2016. And in about 3 months, I got recovered. And I've been, by God's grace, recovered since. So I want to share some things from the big book. You know, on page 163 of Vision for You, it says, you forget. You have just now tapped a source of power much greater than yourself. To duplicate what we have accomplished is only a matter of willingness, patience, and labor. I had to see that there is a source of power. Like I thought I knew about the concept of God, and I've had some spiritual experiences growing up, you know, and I believed in all of that, but I didn't have a relationship with that, you know, and the thing is that we learn going through these steps that we're trying to get a new attitude. We're trying to get a new relationship with our Creator and to discover the obstacles that are in our path. Like those are all the things that I had to learn in going through these steps, but it had to start with entire abstinence. And that's what really was the deal breaker for me. Going through the big book page by page, starting with the preface, you know, and going through the doctor's opinion with a recovered compulsive overeater is an amazing experience. And everyone suggested I do that when I introduced myself as a newcomer. You know, in the doctor's opinion, he says in nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. I desperately wanted to recreate my life. I had no idea how to do it. And I saw that I can't just like pick and choose what I want to do in this program. When she told me about entire abstinence, that's really what it's all about. The definition of abstinence, you know, is based on the doctor's opinion and that there's a difference between a food plan and abstinence. I thought if I have a food plan, I'm definitely abstinence. That may not be the case. I may not be abstinent just because I have a food plan. I had to really learn about what are the ingredients that are my alcoholic ingredients. What are the foods and food combinations and behaviors that I engage in that give me this effect, that get me set up in a cycle that's going to be repeated over and over and again. And yes, unless that person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope. But I was really baffled on even how to get there. So I had to spend quite a bit of time on the doctor's opinion and being willing to listen like a dying person listens and forgetting the 28 years that I had in the beverage program, you know, of in this big book. Really, I knew nothing. I knew absolutely nothing because I didn't know how to get abstinent and stay abstinent and how to do it happily, for goodness sake. How do you do it happily? So I said to my sponsor, I want what you have. I see that you're not really that different than I am. I can see that you don't know this secret handshake or this passcode. I see that you suffered terribly with food because she talked to me about it, but you're not suffering anymore. And I just did exactly what she said that she did. And it really wasn't anything unusual. It's exactly what our big book tells us. You know, and it was suggested that I go through pretty quickly. And once I got the abstinence understood and then understood about a food plan, we got right into the steps. You know, and we're studying in Bill's story right now in our meetings. And we just read the other day, you know, about Ebby. And I don't think we're on page 11 yet, but we'll be getting there. And it says, on page 11, my friend sat before me and he made the point blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not do for himself. And this is what I love. He had been, in effect, raised from the dead. You know what? I love that word effect, because in the doctor's opinion, I learn that that's why I ate the way I ate, because it gives me an effect. Well, the effect that Abby got, she's raised from the dead. I need to be raised from the dead. I need to be remade. And that's what was so exciting for me. Let me see. I have all my notes, mostly from the big book, of what I want to quote. In Bill's story, he says, Abby said to him, when these things were done, the steps, he said, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were essential requirements. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. So I was a worshiper of myself and what I wanted. And I walked all over people. So this is telling me I have to have a total transformation. And that's what I've been doing since January 2016. Really, that's when my life began. The third step, you know, making that decision. Let me see here. That, I'm told, is the keystone. And it's a new direction through a decision. And then I learn that God is the Father and I am His child. It's a new way of relating to my Heavenly Father. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. So I can see here that I don't really need to complicate this. It's going through the steps. I had so much baggage about the whole idea of God and religion and church. And it really just lingered on for a while, like a number of years. During the pandemic, my heart started to call out for something deeper and more. I have been doing this happily. I have been doing abstinence. God has been doing it, really, not me, and doing this work happily. But I just needed something more. You know, and one of our fellows shares all the time in the meetings that we go through the steps, especially the earlier steps, 1 through 9, doing it one foot in front of the other, action, 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 not waiting to feel like this great effect or change. Because it didn't happen for me until I got 3/4 of the way finished with my amends process. And I hope that helps someone. You know, I was very regimented with the tools. I had to be. My sponsor gave me suggestions and she was loving about it, but I took it as life and death. When she said, I suggest that you do this, like I really did it as if my life depended on it. And in the beginning, it seemed almost in the beginning, like checking off boxes. But, you know, something began to change where I wasn't just checking off boxes. Something was happening inside of me. One of the boxes, you know, that I needed to check off each day, and it was, again, just a suggestion to listen to the meeting each day, to listen to for my favorite share, you know, reach out to that person. Connect with them with a text or a call. And do you know, I still do that today, especially now that I'm not on the meetings live anymore, and I haven't been for a long time, several months. I still listen for my favorite share. And I do text or call that person at least once a week. I do that. But every day I want to connect with a recovered fellow. Every day I need to reach out to newcomers and sponsees. And being of service, being useful. When I got into my third step, you know, that's what my sponsor said. She says, now you really need to be calling newcomers. You can tell them you're not yet recovered, but you're doing the work. You can share with them what you're doing, that you got a recovered sponsor, that you understand about the doctor's opinion and entire absence. You can suggest a podcast or two. You can tell them how you got a food plan. and then just get off the phone, you know? And that's what I did. And I called newcomers, and that's still what I do each day. But starting this work, going through it, the tools definitely supported me. And it's all about that personality change and having that awakening. The way I realized that I was recovered was making an outreach call to a newcomer, because I learned to exercise that muscle. I became more and more comfortable doing it. I was in my completing my amends in step 10 and 11. So I was in 9, 10, and 11. And I shared with this newcomer, and I realized that what I was saying really, it wasn't even coming from me. It was like directed out of me. It was just flowing out of me. And I was able to be useful. And I realized that the 9-step promises were coming true. And I called my sponsor and I said, you know, I think I'm recovered. And she said, I knew that you were, but I was waiting for you to see it. It tells me in the chapter, A Vision for You, that my real reliance is always upon him. My sponsor taught me not to rely on her, not to rely on the nutritionist to define my abstinence, that I need to be able to know what is abstinent and not abstinent for me. I need to be equipped and armed how to read labels, how to know what the words mean, and to look up all the alternative words for these ingredients, not to rely on her or the nutritionist, but to know for myself. And even not to rely on the meeting, you know, and that's something I learned in with the circumstances that changed and not being able to be on the meeting live. In a way, it was kind of, I know this is going to sound weird, taken away from me, because I became very dependent on my role, you know, of being heard on the meeting. And, you know, we get wonderful feedback from fellows often when we share. And, you know, I became needing that, you know. And this is the other thing. My relationship with God is the most important thing in my life, over my relationship with my husband, even over my relationship with myself and others. I can't have dependencies, and I can't be getting an effect from anything other than my relationship with God. And having the meeting in the way that I had been relating to it, it was taken from me, and it was really fine the way it worked out. I've learned like a stillness and a quiet inside of me, and to rely on that and to go to this resource, this bottomless pit, you know, of God that's inside of me and that's all around me and that is in my program. Family afterward tells me that I am to demonstrate his omnipotence. I am to share the hope and possibility and the solution. And sometimes, like, I can't reach people right away to share that. So, like, I'll call a newcomer and I'll share, you know, on their voicemail. I would love to share my experience, strength, and hope, and how there is a solution, that I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I do this happily. You know, I would love to share that with you. Let's see here. I have some other notes on the wonderful verses from our precious big book. It's telling me that the spiritual principles would solve all my problems. When I started working with my sponsor, we were barely on step one. And, you know, I just want to say something, and I felt led to say this earlier. When I was working with my sponsor, we would meet a few times a week. Getting abstinent, entirely abstinent, and going through this work and doing, you know, the calls and listening to my meetings, preparing my food each day, you know, and living life, working and having my family here. And it was exhausting. And I fell asleep once on the phone with my sponsor when we were reading together. I just want to share that. And she was so loving. She said to me, you're not going to feel as good as maybe you want to feel, or you're going to feel like yourself. This is really, really hard. It's exhausting work. It's changing my mind and everything, you know, and doing everything and that I don't want to do. I don't necessarily want to do all of this. And it's hard work. And by her telling me that, you know, it helped me. And I always share that with sponsees too, because I hear the overwhelmment in them too. And in More About Alcoholism, it says, apart from divine help, we have no mental defense against the first drink. My defense must come from a higher power. It's like that from day one in getting entirely abstinent and going through this work. I can't do this on my own power. I've got to latch on to that second step, that there is a power greater than myself. I need to latch on to that very quickly. And we learn in We Agnostics that when we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the God idea. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. And then it says also on page 57, he has come to all who honestly sought him. When we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. And you know, that's what I did. I brought my whole self over the, well, of course I did it going through the steps, and I continue to do that over and over as I rework the steps and go through the steps. But something happened to me during the pandemic and the shutdown. I approached God in a new way, and I realized I had so much prejudice and old ideas, and I was willing to lay that at his feet. And I prayed that my eyes would be opened in a new way. And I was directed to do some other book studies, just like step 11 says, you know, in our big book, be quick to see where religious people were right. I had not been doing that. You know, I felt very self-righteous and kind of judgmental. I judged religious people for many, many years. Let's see here. I love in Two Employers on page 143, it says, the physical treatment is but a small part of the picture. He must undergo a change of heart. To get over drinking requires a transformation of thought and attitude. We had to place recovery above everything, for without recovery, we would have lost both home and business. And then it tells me on page 146, Two Employers, being on a radically different basis of life. That's what everything is about in my life today, probably more so than before. You know, in the beverage program, we often hear the longer you're away from a drink, you get closer to a drink. And I know that doesn't make sense, but it makes sense to me. And it's the same with the food program and getting entire abstinence and getting that spiritual awakening. Because, you know, the problem is in my mind and the thoughts that I tell myself. And if I am not doing more and changing more and being more, being different each time, each year, each month, and I'm relying maybe on an experience that I had last year, 6 months ago, 3 years ago, 8 years ago, or, you know, the disease continues to progress, I'm going to be in trouble. And the self-centeredness, the self-seeking, the self-absorption, and the fears and the dishonesty is still so prevalent. You know, it's so much better. I do not harm people to the degree I used to. I still can harm people. And thank you, God, that we have this program that I can share with other recovered fellows, my inventories, and see, you know, what my mistakes were and see what my corrective measures were, can be with God's help. But today, a lot of it is inside in my thoughts and in my heart. You know, pride, oh my goodness, wanting to be perfect. And yesterday in prayer, I could hear my higher power saying to me, Lisa, you're not that important. And that was so good. I'm like, oh, thank you for reminding me. I am not that important. Who's important? The newcomer that's hearing this, you know, or perhaps the person that's stale in their program or that's in relapse. That's the important one. And you know, and the one that has recovery but maybe is floundering and stale and just kind of suffering. And on page 85, it says, what we have is a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual condition. And I love on page 84, sanity will have returned. You know, so it's the proper use of my will is returned. But, you know, I always say I needed to be remade. I am telling you, I truly needed to be remade. I didn't really want to return so much to the person that I was. I really needed to be remade. I continue to learn. So I'm going to be 61 this year. and actually next month, 61, I'll be 61. And I didn't get recovered until I was 52. My husband and I are celebrating 31 years of marriage. So 8 years of that marriage, okay, I've been recovered. So many years of that marriage, I was not recovered. I met him when I was hanging on to the white knuckle abstinence that I had from that treatment facility. But shortly after I got married to him, I walked into the mall and went to Mrs. Fields Cookies, the love of my life, and proceeded to begin on, you know, 23 or 24 years in the disease and being totally absorbed in myself, causing a lot of harm and damage. And the amount of self-centeredness that can still rear its head today, you know, and it just brings me to my knees. So my prayer life, my meditation life, and seeking direction from sources other than just the big book, oh, it's been so, so important. And fellowship, the fellowship that we crave, the fellowship of the spirit, entering the world of the spirit. You know, I am seeing more and more that that's really, it's the invisible world that is what's most important. Yes, my feet need to be grounded here, but this is all temporary. Everything here is temporary. You know, it's my life with my creator and my Lord that is permanent and ongoing, that is just so, so important, so valuable, and gives me such a sense of joy and strength and stability. So I feel like I'm winding down. I'll just say that, you know, in step two, came to believe that we would be restored to sanity. I've always loved that, but what I've always loved even more is the synonym of sanity is stability, being restored to stability in God, through God, you know, by God, on God. And I'm just so grateful for that stability. And it does start with entire abstinence. I can't minimize that, because that's what I did when I came in here. I minimized entire abstinence. I am grateful my sponsor was really thorough and complete with me on the doctor's opinion and understanding about the ingredients, that yes, abstinence from the alcoholic foods, but really understanding about the ingredients. It's no different than an alcoholic being abstinent from alcohol. I need to be entirely abstinent. You know, I had to get clean, and I have to stay clean in order to keep that sober mind, that clear mind, and I have to value it and really treat it with a respect. It's not like, oh, don't make such a big deal of it, you know, when I go to a restaurant. No, I need to really, because I have that allergy of the body and I have the obsession of the mind. And that binge episode that comes from the ingredient may not happen in that one moment. It may happen 3 days later. You know, I won't know. It's a very insidious, subtle thing. And it's also like that with volume and restricting. It's like that with really everything. So, and the other thing that I also have been relying on the last few months is a prayer. God, please save me from myself, because I'm the one that hurts myself by either my words or my thoughts, my actions. Keep me safe from myself and keep my mind sober and clear so I can pray. I always need to have that as a resource, that at any moment I need to be able to turn in prayer. And by keeping my mind sober, God keeps my mind sober and clear, so I know that's my source to go in prayer. So with that, I pass. Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here, and I love you all, and I love all of your shares every morning. I pass.
Thank you very, very much for that, you know, that connected sharing of your journey through this recovery process and the things that you do in order to maintain that respectfully. Thank you so, so much, Lisa. And we'll hear more from her in just a moment, but I wanted to give you the share ID number for Sunday, March 17th, today, 2024, is 21231, 21,231. We'll get Lisa's contact information at the conclusion of this meeting after the recording has stopped, so stay with us to the very last moment to be able to get that. So, Lisa, the lines are now open for questions. If you have a question for Lisa this morning, please unmute your phone by pressing star 1 on your phone keypad. Offer your first name, the first letter of your last name, and your state, so we know how to get in touch with you. And then immediately upon asking your question, would you please press star one again to mute your line? Who would like to ask Lisa a question?
Marcia D.
Marcia D. Where are you from?
Amy G.
Ohio.
Ohio. And did I hear who? Ann G. A-N-N-G?
Amy. Amy G.
Amy. Oh, heavens to Betsy. Hello. I know where you're from. Okay. Next is who?
Barbara P.
from Missouri.
Margaret, did I hear?
Barbara.
What is my head at today and my ears? And Barbara, your last initial, where's your state?
Sure. Barbara P. from Georgia.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you helping me out like that. Okay. Anyone else?
Tamara C. from Missouri.
Tamara C. Hello. From Missouri. Okay. I heard somebody else with an M, maybe. Didn't hear anybody else. Okay, so it looks like we have Marcia D, Amy G, Monique. Is that what I'm hearing?
Monique. Yeah. Monique.
From what state?
Tennessee.
Okay, I'm going to call it Monique F. I hope that's right. And did I hear anybody else?
Donna M.
Donna M. And from where are you from?
Toronto.
Okay, in Canada. Okay, great. Okay, let's go back over and see who we have then. For up for first question would be Marcia D. from Ohio, followed by Amy G. from Maryland. Your question, please, Marcia. Good morning. And everybody else, star one, please.
Good morning. This is Marcia D., recovered in Ohio. Thank you, Lisa. Wow, what a just a beautiful journey through your recovery and all the experience, strength, and hope. And I just want to thank you for all that you contribute to this program and all you continue to share. I guess the question I would have today is just how you stay spiritually connected to your higher power. I think you spoke about that in many ways, but just a little bit more. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. You know, I'm muted and now I'm unmuted. I hope you guys can hear me. Can you hear me?
You're good.
Oh, we lost you there. Are you there?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now, Mel?
Yeah.
Okay. Now I can't.
I won't mute again because I don't want to risk it. Okay. Thank you, Marcia. It's great to hear you. Well, you know, it's my need for that time has grown in the amount of time, you know, but it's a wonderful experience. So getting up very, very early, I pray and I meditate. So I do exactly what the big book, you know, in step 11 says. I do meditate. It's grown over the years. Now I do 30 minutes of meditation. I usually will meditate initially 7 minutes. I set the timer. I know that sounds funny, but it's just what works for me. It's what I had to do from the beginning to get disciplined. I had to set timers, you know, on my phone or my iPad. First, it started with a minute or 2 minutes, and I would just sit quietly and I just want to hear you, God. You know, I love you. I just need to feel you, or I just want to, you know, acknowledge this time, give you this time, put you first, you know, put you first in my life, in my day. And now it's up to 30 minutes, but I usually break it up in like 7 minutes or two sets of 15 minutes or whatever. But I read from the Bible. I read from the big book. And I just do the third step prayer. And I ask for guidance and strength and protection all through the day. Usually there's something I'm needing to work out. So I pray for guidance. But you know what? I also been praying for a lot of other people. That I'm learning has been a great thing that's helping me, is to pray for others. Like, stop thinking so much about myself. I pray for our country. I pray for the world. I pray for the political situation, the wars, that there be peace, that God's will, you know, would come in and guide our leaders. I pray for friends and co-fellows and sponsees and sponsors. And I thank God for sobriety, for abstinence, for my family, for health, but really and truly for, I just can't even say how grateful I am for abstinence and sobriety, because I prayed a long time before I got abstinent and recovered, and I just truly felt that it was hopeless. So that's what I find helpful for me.
Thank you very much, thank you very much for your question, Marcia, this morning from Ohio. Amy G., your question this morning, and then that'll be followed by Barbara.
Thank you, Mel. Thank you so much for your service, for moderating, and Lisa, wow, awesome. Thank you so much for your share. I greatly appreciate it. My name is Amy G. Listen, my question is, Lisa, is that I love how you spoke about the tools and how it helps you in your program. And in my humble opinion, sometimes I feel like people think of it, our program is not a tool-based program. It's just an abstinence, but a God-based program. And in my humble opinion, it's both, and that the tools are often ways that we get closer to God. And you made that very clear. And I was wondering if you could just talk about a couple of the tools that you feel help bring you closer to God, that's not just about prayer and meditation, but it's also action focused, you know, faith without works is dead. And I was wondering what tools are your favorites as far as bringing you closer and keeping you spiritually fit.
Oh, I just love that question, because tools has been a huge part for me every day. Tools are a part, and it's intertwined with the steps. So, I guess a step and a tool is that when I am disturbed, I immediately pause and I ask God, you know, to remove this from me. Help me. I pray for a new way of thinking. And if it lingers, I write it out just like on a little piece of paper real quickly. And I share it with a fellow. So I call someone, I pick up the phone and I call a recovered fellow and I share it. And sometimes I'll get something back from them, like whatever they're hearing, or sometimes they just listen. And then I turn my thoughts to someone that I could be of service to. So I call a newcomer, or I'll pray or do something for someone else. So I have it all intertwined with the steps. Writing my nightly review, I do a written nightly review every night. Well, actually, I usually start it late in the afternoon or early in the evening. I don't do it at night. And that's a written nightly review. So that's writing. That's a tool. But that's also with the step 11. And, you know, really just the practice of texting or calling newcomers and trying to be useful and share something to give them hope, you know, that's a tool. My food plan, oh my goodness, you know, having my food plan. I know, you know, in the morning or at the end of the day before, I know exactly what I'm doing, you know, with my food. That is something I'm using, you know, as a tool. My food plan for sure. And abstinence and not deviating from that. So prayer, meditation, the phone, the steps, meetings. Oh, absolutely. I'm usually listening to you guys, the recorded meeting from the day before at 5 a.m. I'm usually listening at 5 a.m. from the meeting the day before. And I usually can get two meetings in, the 10 a.m. and the 7 a.m. So I get such an amazing injection of energy and just, oh, it's just wonderful. And I write the names down oftentimes of fellows that share, that inspire me, or that just give me hope. Or sometimes they are hopeless and I hear their share and they're scared and they're sharing that, and I'll reach out to them. So that's a tool. Yeah. So I hope that helps. I pass.
Thank you very much, Amy G. from Maryland, for your question this morning. Barbara P. from Georgia, you're up next with your question, and Tamara C. will come in after you.
Hey, Melanie, and hi, Lisa. Thank you so much. Barbara P., recovered compulsive overeater in Georgia, in Atlanta. And, Lisa, you really touched my heart. And you touched on that you are married. And I guess my question is this. And I don't know if your family is supportive of your program. You know, we do, it sounds like you invest a good amount of time in it and joyfully. So, but is your family as joyful? And how do you balance? How do you find your balance so that it works in your life, no matter what else is in your life?
What a great question, Barbara. And it's so nice to hear your voice. Yes. Well, my husband is very supportive. You know, in the beginning, it was a little bit of a challenge for him when I started listening to Vision. I had earbuds in my ears all the time because I was listening to the meeting all the time. And I was doing the work, you know, that my sponsor gave me, which I'm very grateful for the way she sponsored me and kept me busy, you know, and very focused and moving through the steps quickly. So I had to have a talk with him in the beginning because he was like, okay, like, what is going on with the earbuds? And, you know, I kind of miss you in the kitchen and you always have these earbuds and you can't hear me and you're not talking to me. So that's been something over the years that I have refined. And I look at my husband, you know, when he's in the kitchen and I want to hear what he says. I want to hear him, you know, but I had to really work on that. I found getting through the steps, especially up into step 9, when I made the amends to my husband for all the other things that I had done over the years that were really hurtful and inconsiderate and selfish, that just through the process of change, like I want to be the wife that he wants me to be, that God would have me be, that the program would have me be. And so I am becoming more and more that, but it took a little bit of a learning curve. Now we do usually have, like he has his own dinner and I have my dinner. He just, I don't know. It would be nice if we could both eat the same thing, but we don't. And that's something that we're just used to now. So that's okay. But I would say the men's process is what made the big difference. And I asked him, you know, what's your favorite time of the day to spend with me? And he told me early evening. So when I started sponsoring, I did not sponsor where it would interfere with that time. And then I found that I'm better in the kitchen with him without the earbuds in the morning. And I want to hear what he has to say. And when he's excited and happy about something, like I want to be there and listen, you know, or when he's disturbed or upset about something, you know, I want to be there with support and let him know that he matters. He's of value. So it took a little bit of time, but overall, yes, he's very supportive and just sticking with it, staying close to God, asking God for direction. The program changed me. And just in the process of that change, I become a more thoughtful and other person, you know, considered person. So I know that didn't sound, that sounded really bumpy at the end, but I'll pass.
Thanks very much, Barbara P., for your question. Tamara C. from Missouri, you're up. And then Monique F. from Tennessee will follow you. Your question, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Melanie and Lisa. Thank you both for your service. So, Lisa, my question is around the doctor's opinion and entire abstinence. Like when you're working with people to help them, like I'm trying to decide between two approaches. One is to get their food clean and clear so they can get an effect from the big book, you know, and have a clear mind to understand it. And the other is get them into the doctor's opinion to help them understand the food. So then they can, better define their abstinence. So can you give a little guidance on your approach with newcomers on this?
Thank you. And it's such a great question because it's about sponsorship and that's really such a vital part for our recovery. So when I work with fellows, oftentimes they're coming back from relapse. So that's one way of dealing with it. So when they're coming back from relapse, I spend a good bit of time with them. And, you know, my experience is when people relapse, it's because they're not abstinent. When they're thinking they're abstinent, they're still ingesting something. So I will go through a process of looking at their food. Not that I want to be the food police, because I do not want to be the food police. And everyone doesn't have to have the same alcoholic ingredients that I have, you know, but we talk about their food and what they think their alcoholic ingredients are. And then they'll send their food into me of what they're eating. And I look at the labels with them just like the first week or two to teach them how I was taught to read the labels and to look up the words. So that's one way of doing it. I don't want to spend a lot of time with that because it's very draining and like, I don't really like that part of sponsorship, but it's what helps me. So I try and just give them a little bit of that understanding that, and it's really up to them. It's totally up to them if they want this. And I found that that word entire abstinence made all the difference for me. And listening to the podcasts that are available on our website on abstinence from a variety of different speakers really, really helped me. So then when I work with the person that's not coming back from relapse, but just is brand spanking new to OA, we get right into the doctor's opinion. And when we get into that part of the doctor's opinion, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. I talk to them about the word relief. And I say, you know, relief sounds like a really good word, doesn't it? And they're like, yeah. And I'll say, but guess what? Relief isn't enough. You know, I can't live on relief. If I'm a real compulsive overeater or an alcoholic type with this food, like relief is just not going to cut it. I have to have freedom, you know, and in order for me to truly get this freedom, I need to have clarity of mind to understand what you guys are presenting to me. And that's where we have to have a clear mind of entire abstinence, you know. And the thing I've discovered with sponsoring is they'll say, I am so ready. I am ready. I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm like, okay, great. Well, then when we start talking about entire abstinence, they're like, oh, I don't know if I'm that ready, you know. So the pain is driving them to wanting to be sponsored and wanting to go through this work. But then when they have, you know, when they see about we have to put all the food down, put it all down. So I say, well, you know, try it your way. And there are lots of sponsoring styles out there. There are people that won't ever talk about food and people do get recovered, you know. I'm just grateful my sponsor talked to me about food and food plans, the difference between abstinence and a food plan. And she helped me understand. But once we got that down, boom, we were right in the steps and we really didn't talk a lot about it anymore. But some people aren't there. You know, they really want to fight it and they can't imagine life without it, you know? So we let food be the great persuader rather than us, you know, the sponsors. So let food beat them over the head. So I hope that helps. I pass.
Thank you very much, Tamara C. from Missouri, for your question this morning. Monique F. from Tennessee, your question, followed by Donna. And then we'll probably have time for more questions, Lisa, if you have time. So we'll open it up again in a couple.
Thank you all for your service this morning. My name is Monique F. I'm from Tennessee, and I guess I have two questions. One was, could you make a suggestion maybe like how you made the transition from the AA, from using the Big Book for your AA recovery and sobriety and to for the food? Because I do have sobriety in AA, and I, you know, really being honest, I swore that I would never use the Big Book for my food recovery, so I read all the OA literature over and over again. And so now, due to some circumstances, I'm having to, you know, go to the basics and the foundation of it all, which is the Big Book. So would you offer a suggestion about making that transition? And then, well, if I could ask one other, it would be that I think I just heard you say something about the food, you know, it causes us to want to reach out, and the pain of that causes us to want to reach out. Is there another way, you know, to reach humility? Because, of course, I wouldn't be here if I hadn't been beaten down by the food. So, yeah, I hope that makes sense. That's two questions.
Thank you so much for asking. And, you know, I can really understand that second question. I really can. I totally, and I'll start with the second question. So, you know, does the food really have to be the thing to beat us down into, you know, humility and being willing to listen? And I can so relate, because I've heard people pray, or they say on the meeting, you know, pray that, like, that this is your bottom, you know, like that this will be enough. And that's where God's grace comes in. I don't know, you know, when it's going to be or how it's going to be. And that's why I always say, I really can't take credit for even the willingness that I had to pick up the phone and to work with my sponsor and to do what she asked me to do. And it's God's grace that comes in. It's like a little crack comes in. And because I have talked to people and they are crying and they're in so much pain and you know, they really want to want it. They really want to want it. And, you know, the book, the chapter in the big book, To the Wives, it talks about the different types, like level one, level two. And sometimes I'll suggest that fellows, you know, read that. And like on page 109, it talks in the very bottom portion of that page, it says, these are the earmarks of a real alcoholic. Perhaps he can still tend to business fairly well. He has by no means ruined everything. As we say among ourselves, he wants to stop, you know, and that's like the second type. That's like class two or level two, you know, and I don't know. Sometimes I just think it's helpful for people to read that, but prayer really, really, and that's what I did before, before I even went to that treatment center all those years ago. I knew that this is something that is not going to go away. I had my mother come over because I could not stop eating peanut butter toast. And I had seen my brother like that with cocaine. So I knew that this is like how my brother was with cocaine, but I'm like this with food. And my brother used to cry about it. He used to say, I don't want to be like that. I can't stop. So I understood what I knew now that I was experiencing that. And my mother knew it too. And she said to me, that's how your brother is with cocaine. And I could tell by the look in her face that she didn't know what to say to me. She didn't know how to help me. And I knew right then and there that no one is going to be able to help me. So I started praying. I mean, I went into churches that I'm not even affiliated with that were open on the weekends, and I would sit and pray every weekend because that's usually when my biggest binges were the worst. And God truly answered my prayers. And I got to that treatment center, and God has answered my prayers today by giving me recovery. But it took me all these years to find a vision for you to hear through the big book. And that leads me to the first part of your question. I love the big book as a compulsive overeater. I think the doctor's opinion is so amazing as a compulsive overeater because I have to have abstinence. And he's telling me that that's the only thing to start with. You know, I have to start with entire abstinence. And then Bill writes that unless that mind is clear and the body is clear, they're not going to understand what is being presented to them. I had been in big book meetings and step meetings for 28 years when I came to OA. And my sponsor said to me, how am I going to show you anything new about the big book? You've been in all these years. And I said, but I know nothing about abstinence and recovery. I had to come in totally as a newcomer. Like, I know nothing. I know nothing about the big book. I really didn't know anything about the big book. It was really God's grace that helped me with the alcohol. That's it. And it was just God's grace that carried me. I really didn't know until I got into OA and got entirely abstinent. Now I take everything into my AA program. It's like I had to work it through the OA first. So with that, I pass.
Thank you very much. Monique F. from Tennessee. Donna M. from Toronto, Canada. Your question, please. And then we're going to open it up for some more questions if you have time.
Hi, I'm Donna M., and I'm hoping it's my turn because I was on muting and didn't hear the call. So I'm Donna M. from near Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And Lisa, I am so grateful that I heard your share today, and I so related, especially to the part about the self-seeking, the ego, the need to appear in the meetings when I'm speaking as a recovered compulsive overeater. And especially this shows up for me also in Zoom meetings and at service level. And for me, I've had to do step work on this. Even now, as I was about to speak, I was rehearsing. And, you know, when I find myself doing that, I just say, God help, God help. And I'm just wondering, my question will be, if you can talk more about that or give specifics or what's helped you to let go of that need for that validation to appear recovered. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for sharing. You know, it's that self-seeking, that self-absorption, the self-centered fear. And it's step 6 and 7. So it's really through our wonderful program, you know, steps 4 through, well, step 10, you know, if you're there on step 10, writing that inventory and going through that process and surrendering, asking God, step 6 and 7, to remove the character defects. But, you know, it's the sincerity of my heart that helps when I am in that prayerful state. And, you know, for example, like I'll relate it to also resentments. Like if I have a lingering resentment or a self-centered fear, those are the things, you know, that can bother me. And or judging others, criticizing others, you know, in my head. I just stop right then and there. And if I have the ability to hit my knees, I do, you know, not that you have to, but I like to. And I'll say, you know, I don't want to have this. Please, I pray for the willingness to be willing to release the need for this behavior, for this thought, for this thing that is taking me from being useful to you. And then asking in the 7-step prayer, you know, writing an inventory definitely helps, sharing it with a fellow. But it's really through service to others, you know, getting out of self, exercising that muscle of, oh, sometimes, you know, if something is going on at work or there's a challenge or a change going on in my life, you know, and just some difficulties coming up, and there have been things, you know, over the past few years, I'm sure all of us, especially as we get older and loved ones get older and just life changes. The world is changing. It becomes so much more complicated and things are changing all around us. Sometimes I'll say, just please show me how I can be helpful. Show me someone that needs what I have and that has what I need. You know, newcomers have, they often have what I need, you know, and they need what I have. So having a list of newcomers' names or people that I can pray for, that I can call, and just not even talk about myself, doing things randomly for others without people knowing it, without being acknowledged, you know, getting that acknowledgement, doing things that I don't want to do, you know, for my husband, you know, just going in his man cave and cleaning and dusting and getting it all spiffy. And like, he doesn't notice it sometimes until like a few days later, because he'll see something was moved and he'll go, oh, did you do something? And, you know, but just doing things, you know, that just, yes. And because it, I think it's something that we're all riddled with. I love Dr. Bob when he talks about going to the Oxford group and seeing how they were at ease and comfortable in themselves, like talking, and they weren't thinking so much about themselves. They were just comfortable and at ease. That's just really wonderful. That bondage of self can still be very much on me. And I compare myself to others. I compare my insides to others. I am not always the best, you know, speaker. We have some amazing speakers on our meeting and I compare myself. It's like, oh, I'm so disorganized. I bounced all over the place. Or they were so smooth. They were so this. And, you know, that's that self-centeredness. And I have to just give that to God. And I'm not being grateful for the gifts that God has given me. I'm like, in a way, criticizing God. Because God made me the way I am. And I'm saying, I know better. He should have made me this way. And there's that arrogance again. That's all the disease. If I let that manifest into a big thing, like that is where the disease is going to thrive, you know, and that's the subtlety of the today, how it hides out. I hope that helps. I pass.
Thank you so much, Donna M. from Toronto, Canada, for your question this morning. You know what? There's plenty of time for more questions. Are you up for it, Lisa?
I am. Yes.
Okay, good deal. Excellent. If you would like to ask Lisa a question this morning, please give me your first name, first letter of your last name, and your state. And I'll
Rifka
take your notes down.
Rifka.
Debbie B. from Utah. Pete B. I didn't hear after Pete. Give me one more chance
Carolyn
for somebody's
F.
name.
From New York.
Carolyn.
Ruvain H. from Israel.
Ruvain. Is that what you said? Ruvain H. from
yep.
Israel? Okay,
yep.
Gotcha.
Hi, Ramona A. from Vermont.
Ramona A. I recognize your voice. Mary Lee R. from Oregon, huh?
Yes, ma'am.
Very good. How do you do? Did you catch all of you? I have Rivka, Pete, Carolyn, Ravain, Ramona, and Mary Lee. Anybody else?
Debbie B. from Utah.
Debbie B. Oh, good. I'm glad I heard you. I was starting to hear crickets there for a second. Okay, I got Rivka, Pete, and Carolyn, the first three up. Rivka, I'd love to hear your question this morning. Rivka R. from Maryland.
Good morning. Am I unmuted?
Oh, yes, you are. Yes,
okay,
you are.
Okay, great. Good morning, and thank you so much, Lisa, for that very inspiring and moving share. That I'm so glad that you got on because I miss you in the mornings. So my question is, how do you explain to a newcomer the difference between a food plan and abstinence?
Oh, that's a great one. So a food plan is something that I'm given by a nutritionist in my experience, and it may change like as my age changes or some station in life, you know, like if someone becomes pregnant or is nursing, you know, things like that. They have to change their food plan to allow for that, or as we get older, you know, our metabolism slows down, so the nutritionist might need to adjust the food plan, you know, things like that. Maybe I go to the doctor and they say, you know, you're really deficient in something, you know, and you need to add like healthy fats, you know, so I'll talk to a nutritionist about that, or calcium, you know, I need to build my bones. So that type of stuff, the food plan will change. But now abstinence is something that is not going to change, other than I will probably add more items that I become more aware of that become problematic. So, you know, I have an alcoholic ingredient, it's sugar. That is not something that I'm going to be able to, you know, add back in, you know, to my food plan. So portions can be a problem for me. So I need to weigh and measure my food. I can be a restrictor and think I have control, or I can overeat and take comfort in the volume. So I have to weigh and measure my food. And then, you know, over the years, I have actually had to add other things to my list of alcoholic ingredients that I wasn't as aware of. And I hope that helps. So I pass.
Thank you very much, Rivka R. from Maryland, for your question this morning. Next up, Pete B. from Pennsylvania, followed by Carolyn M. Hi, Pete.
Good morning, Melanie. Thanks for taking the meeting and for your service. And Lisa, thank you, too. I also miss hearing you in the morning, so thanks for your presentation. It was deep and heavy. So my question is, in your response to a question, you had indicated that you had made amends to your husband for being inconsiderate and dishonest. How do you make amends for that?
Oh, that's such a great question, and deep and heavy. Okay, so, I had to admit that to him, that I know that I did those things, that I was very inconsiderate of him. A lot of it is through living amends, but really giving him the chance. Now, this was just my experience, giving him the chance to share with me what his experience was like being on the receiving end of me, like a tornado, the untreated person, how it was for him. And, you know, he had not really been able to verbalize it. I mean, in arguments, you know, he would, like, oh, you're horrible to live with, you know, things like that. But, you know, he had a chance. I gave him that chance. My sponsor encouraged me to ask him to share, you know, when I asked him, was there anything else that I did? And he went on for a good 45 minutes. So, and then asking him how I could make it right, and then sharing with him what I had prayed about, and that what my understanding of ways that I could make it right, and getting his insight and feedback on that. But the biggest part is the living amends, and then also letting him know that I'm going to be a continued work in progress. And I have had over the years, you know, to go back and say, I saw it, you know, I did it again. I was wrong when I, and, you know, I'm very grateful for my husband and the way he is. And he's a beautiful person, and he's worked a lot on himself in his life before he met me and during the time that we've been together. And he said to me when I said that, he said, I'm just glad you're seeing it. And like, that was wonderful. Instead, you know, he didn't like rake me over the coals, because sometimes people can do that where they'll really want to torture you with, yeah, you're such a loser, you're such a failure, and I know you're never going to change. And no. He said, I'm just glad you're seeing it. And then I had to work a program. I have to work a program. At home, it's like, you know, the most difficult oftentimes. That's where the steps save my life every day. They save my marriage. I mean, I'm married today because of the steps and because I'm recovered. And a lot of also because of him. And, you know, I changed, but he's changed as a result. It's like, in a way, he's kind of mirrored the things. You know, like he'll say, oh, that wasn't very honest of me when I did that in the store. Or I was wrong to say that. I shouldn't have been so judgmental. Like, you know, he'll start to say things. And he doesn't really have a 12-step meeting or program. But I have to look only at myself. And I know that that's what you were asking me. So I hope that that answered your question.
Thank you, Pete B., for your question this morning. Next up, Carolyn S. Followed by Ravine.
Hi,
I think is what you said. Ravine. Mm-hmm. Hi, Carolyn, from New York.
Hi, this is Carolyn S. from New York, recovered compulsive overeater. And I think I got my answer from the last session, but I just wanted to, or last question. But I just wanted to let you know I relate so much to your story. I'm 61 next month, married 33 years. And my husband said at times throughout that period that I spend more time with strangers than himself. And of course, I'm getting defensive, like, these are not strangers, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, I've done a lot of damage over the years. And the earbuds, I tell him up front, if I walk into a room, I say, you know, I've got my earbuds in, I'm not ignoring you, just let me know if you need my attention and I'll take them out. And I do that. So I was going to ask, how do you find the balance between program and family time? And one thing that I have protected pretty well is 8 to 9 p.m. is family time. You know, I still have a daughter at home. So the idea is like for us to watch a show or whatever. Are there any other, you know, specific suggestions that you would have?
Yes, and I can just relate to everything that you're saying. And I found, you know, just having me, when I am able to, taking the earbuds out, that's always good. But just being loving to my husband, loving and affectionate, showing him, hugging him, and developing like a pattern and, every morning giving him a hug and a kiss, leaving notes for him, you know, calling him, texting him through the day, and just telling him how much I appreciate him and I love these things about him, you know, and listing them and not being phony about it, but showing him through my behaviors and my actions. And I really can understand that. I know. I think at one time my husband said that to me too, you know, you're nicer to them than you are to me. You know, I've heard that. Oh, you talk nicer to them than you do to me. And that hurt my heart, but I need to hear that. And then I have to learn from that comment and with God's help change, you know, and with God's help change that behavior with God's help and not be just nice to these other people and treat him like chopped liver, you know, but show him that I really value him and appreciate him. And yeah. And then the stumbling blocks that we stumbled with over the years, you know, like with his son and different things like that, that have been sore spots, really working with the steps and my recovery to have the change of heart and behaviors so that he can see it. He can see it, you know, and knowing what my weak spots are so that when those things start to come up, I can gird myself in steps 10 and 11 and 12 and be talking with my sponsors, doing a lot of prayer and meditation, writing, getting those inventories clear. That's really what it is, having a strong program within myself, you know. I hope that helps.
Thank you very much for your question this morning, Carolyn S. from New York. Ravine H. from Israel, your question, and then followed by Ramona.
Thank you very, very much. You're pronouncing my name fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lisa, for your really, really helpful, you know, just reaffirmed a lot of the things that I have learned from my sponsor and from this program and from God, and doing my best to give over that message to my protege. One of the things that helped me was the idea of that the tool, it's like the opposite of an earlier question. Rather than saying, you know, working the steps, but how do you focus on the tools? My experience, my history with OA and different programs has been there's a lot more emphasis on the tools than the steps per se. And in fact, I think for me, when I heard you answer some of the questions about, you know, when you did talk about that related to that question, some of the tools that you were mentioning in my mind, well, that's steps. That's not necessarily tools, although you could classify them as tools too. So I wonder, do you establish with your protégés the idea of the distinction between the two? And one last example that's really helped me is that, like, if there's a tool with a food plan and the tool of I'm going to measure 5 ounces, you know, the scale says 5.1 or 5.2 at times, and I'm not going to say, oh, well, you know, I've ruined my abstinence now, or I didn't make a call. Anyway, I think I've said enough. So if you have any response, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. So, you know, I know that A Vision for You is a regular OA meeting, and we happen to be focused in the big book, so it's a big book study. I know that when I've gone to other OA meetings, they will read all the tools, like they'll read the tools. I don't regularly attend a lot of other OA meetings where I hear all the tools. So, like, I know that writing is one of the tools, sponsorship, the telephone. I don't know all the other tools. So, my experience with OA is really just through A Vision for You. So that's why, like, those are the only tools that I listed, because that's all that I remember. But I have gone as a speaker onto other OA meetings, and I hear when they read, like, they'll list all the tools and they go through a discussion of them. So, but I don't have all that ingrained in my mind. But I just go by what my experience was with my sponsor, which was she taught me to make calls to recovered fellows when I was starting the steps with her, and she encouraged me to call recovered fellows from Vision. So that's what I did, and that's how I sponsor now. And because I'm still just Vision is really my exposure to OA. That's all I do. I just do Vision, you know. And then the other question was about, you mentioned about the scale, and I know that some people can have that, and I do not even go there with a sponsee, and I don't even go there with myself. Like, if I weigh something and it's like, you know, 0.1 or I don't even do that. And to me, that just is a big setup for a major relapse. And that can be a very dangerous place. And I remember when my sponsor, when I first started working with her, I was not weighing and measuring. And she lovingly said, you know, do you think perhaps weighing and measuring might be helpful for you? Since, you know, sometimes volume or restricting, especially at that time, I was a big restrictor. I was so scared when she mentioned about weighing and measuring, because my experience in the past, before Vision, when I would just try on my own, and even in the treatment center, we learned about weighing and measuring, it would just not go well for me. Weighing and measuring did not go well. I was so afraid of a binge because of weighing and measuring, but she said, will you just trust me and we'll do this together? You know, so she kind of held my hand through it, and I started weighing and measuring, and I found, oh my goodness, I have so much freedom in my head now. Like, I'm not thinking I ate too much vegetables at dinner and now I'll have to cut back at breakfast, or, you know, or I ate under what I should have eaten at lunch, so now I can overeat at dinner, because that's the way my addict brain would always work. So I found freedom and space in my head. And the whole purpose of that is so that I could start to understand and accept what you guys are presenting to me in the big book, the solution. It's a very regimented process going through the big book. It's a very specific, it is our basic text. You know, it lays out the precise way that they got recovered. And for us as compulsive overeaters, I think it just works beautifully. But I hope that helps you. I don't know if I went off in a tangent, but that's my experience. I pass.
Thank you very much. Excuse me. Very much for your question, Raveen H. from Israel. Ramona, you're next. Ramona A. from Vermont. Good morning to you. And then Mary Lee will follow up right after you, Ramona.
Okay. Good morning. Good morning. And thank you, Melanie. And thank you, Lisa. So good to hear you. Ramona A. from Vermont. And my question is around step six. I'm always intrigued by step six. And I know there's just that one little paragraph in the big book about it. But by the time that Bill writes or whoever writes the AA 12 and 12, and then we have the OA 12 and 12, they do a lot more explaining of what's behind that little paragraph. That's just like the end of step six. So could you please explain how you work step six and how you take sponsees through it so they really understand?
Well, that's such a great question. Yeah, there is so little in the big book about step six. So you know, when we got, my sponsor and I, when we got to the step six and seven, so I completed step five, my fifth step, and then I had that hour of meditation and prayer. And, you know, that's real. I was taught that's when I do step six and seven. Let me go and find that in the big book. So that's when I do. So it says here, oh, my goodness, blah, 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 blah. Oh gosh, I don't know. My head is just whirling right now. But returning home, you know, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. And it says, we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Isn't that amazing that we get to know God better by being more honest with another person? You know, by being honest with another compulsive overeater, I get to know God better. It's so cool. And then it says, carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask ourselves if we have admitted anything, for we're building an arch through which we shall walk. A free man at last. Is our work solid so far? It goes through those questions, and then we turn the page. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six. We have emphasized willingness. So that's the whole thing with step six. It's a willingness. And it says, are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? So we're thinking, like, am I willing to let him just take them all? And then it says, when ready, we say something like this. And then that's a wonderful step seven prayer. So we read through that together. And then she goes, okay, now we're going to look at your A step list. And I kept saying, wait. What about step six and seven? She goes, no, we're going to keep moving. They'll get addressed. And I thought, I don't understand. I'm going to be missing something. This is pretty important. And I have a feeling that I am missing something really important here. And you're telling me to keep moving. But she told me to trust her. And she told me that this is what she did. And I wanted what she had. So I looked at my step eight list. Then she's like, okay, now you're going to pick your first amend. I keep thinking, but what about step six and seven? I don't get it. She was just keep moving, pick that first amend that you want to make, that you're willing to make. So I did. And then she goes, okay, you made that first amend. Now let's go right into step 10. I'm like, oh my gosh, but what about step six and seven? But I kept moving. Guess what? When you get to step 10 and you're doing your 10 steps, step six and seven get addressed in step 9, 10, 11, and 12. So while we're making our amends to others, step six and seven is getting addressed. You know, while we're doing prayer and meditation, step 11. So it all works out, but we don't see that in the beginning. So my experience is in step 10, step six and seven truly get addressed. And also in step 9. Because just even being willing to make those amends and go through all of that, we're changing. We're changing. God is removing the character defects on God's terms and in God's timing. But sometimes when I do 10 steps and I'll have this lingering problem, like a lingering behavior or lingering resentment that is just really frustrating, I realize, you know, I need to really look at step six here and pray for the willingness to be willing to let this thing be removed. there is some part of me that is like getting enjoyment out of this. So I pray for the willingness to be willing. And do you know, it starts to get lifted. I don't know. Just seeing that really helps me. And then it starts to get lifted. And I keep working through the steps and trying to help others, being kind to others, you know, getting out of self, sponsoring, completing my amends, going in prayer and meditation. So I hope that helps. I pass.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ramona. Thank you. Yes, thank you, Ramona A., for your question. My apologies. Looks like time has gotten by us quicker than I had thought. Mary Lee from Oregon and Mary Lee R. from Oregon and Debbie, is it Debbie R. from Utah? I'm so sorry we won't be able to take your questions today, but stick around clear to the end and we'll get Lisa's telephone number for you to be able to call her personally and get that question. It's just unfortunate we won't be able to hear the answer today. I'm so sorry for that. Time does have a tendency to march on, doesn't it? But thank you for those that did ask the questions this morning. Ramona's will be the last one today. And thank you, Lisa, for all that you've given this morning to this vision for you and for that beautiful presentation we'll be able to have on our recorded archives. So grateful for you. So we will be closing now, as we always do in our usual fashion at A Vision for You, by reading from page 164 of our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.